Welcome to another episode of the official DigiMarCon podcast. Here's some of the latest top-voted keynotes, panels, and masterclasses from recent DigiMarCon digital marketing, media, and advertising conferences worldwide. Get ready to gain insight into emerging strategies, the latest trends, and best practices from industry thought leaders and experts to move your business, brand, or agency to the next level.
For fun one day, I asked ChatGPT what chickens have in common with marketers. And these are ChatGPT's words, not my words. Vision, you never see a chicken with its head down. They're always looking ahead, scanning the horizon, looking for predators. Adaptability, right? They can adapt to diverse environments. They can go from free range to urban coops. And then focus and productivity. I have to read this one because this is straight from ChatGPT. Have you observed how focused and determined chickens are when pecking at the ground for food? Right. But all joking aside, chickens are also empathetic. So, you know, what does empathy have to do with marketing? Why should all marketers strive for empathy, especially when data has become the holy grail of our marketing strategies? So in explaining the human mind, neuroscientist Antonio Damasio said, we are not thinking machines that feel. Rather, we are feeling machines that think. So we actually cannot make decisions if we cannot feel. Right? So empathetic marketing recognizes, understands, and appeals to the role that emotions have in the decision-making process. Now, as I said before, right, data has become the holy grail of our modern marketing. It allows us to segment our data. It allows us to personalize to some extent, but we're beginning to rely solely on logic and rationality. And what we have found is that we're not tapping into those emotions that consumers have when they're making decisions. Right? But when we pair data with empathy, this allows us to build deeper human connections. And in turn, it increases customer satisfaction, trust, loyalty, lead quality, and conversion rates. So here I am, I'm on my empathetic soapbox, right? Not just on this stage, but to my clients every day in life. And the response I usually get is, but Emily, I'm a modern marketer. Of course I take my consumers' needs into account. Of course I am consumer focused, right? But it turns out that according to studies, and you'll see I will have a lot of studies linked in here. So when you download the deck, you can fact check me, but marketers suck at empathy. And in fact, chickens are better at empathy than marketers. See, I'm bringing it all around, tying in the chicken thing. So Dr. Johann Satola did a study, and he found that the more empathetic marketers believed they were, the worse they were at predicting their consumers' reactions, right? And this is because they had biases and personal preferences that they didn't realize they had that they were relying on when they were making these decisions. However, once they were alerted to that fact, once they were, hey, did you know you have all of this underlying subconscious stuff that's being pulled in? Once they were alerted to that, they were in fact able to better predict their consumers' emotions. So it's one thing to have all of these numerous studies, right? But what does it mean in the real world? What does it mean in our day-to-day for our marketing programs, for our touch points, for our customer journeys? And this is where my team and I, across many, many brands, across many, many clients, we have come up with a systematic five-step empathetic marketing framework to be able to introduce empathy into all of those marketing touch points. So here it is. Alert ourselves to our own bias. Understand and identify consumers' core emotional motivators. And then what you'll also see is there are actually underlying core human values that underlie those emotional motivators that you need to identify as well. Score all of your marketing communications using the empathy scorecard. I don't know why that communications thing did that. That's weird. And then repeat the process, right? Because our marketing programs are constantly evolving and changing. So this isn't just a one-time fits all thing. So let's jump in. So while it's one thing to know that marketers all inherently have bias, it's important on both an individual and organizational level to understand and identify those and what biases may be impacting our ability to connect with consumers, right? So there are two different types of bias. And I'm sure this comes as no shock. It's the explicit, right? That's where, hey, we are out there. We are open. We are saying, here's our beliefs. Here's our thoughts. Here's our feelings. But the other implicit are really those judgments that are often unknowingly made that are unconscious. And it's the implicit bias that has the ability to trip up marketers because they're unconscious. So you can't, you don't know you have them and you think you don't have them. But I guarantee you, we all do. So there are actually five main implicit biases. Affinity, right? So gravitating towards people who are similar to you. Every high school cafeteria in the history of ever, right? Age, gender, name, race, ethnicity. So all of those are fairly explanatory. But consider these different types and the role that they're playing in your work. Now, no judgment, right? We all have them, but how do we find them? Just take a test. Harvard's Project Implicit is a very good place to start. I also linked to it in this slide. So when you download them, you can just go on there, right? And I'm not saying you have to go around and shout out to the rooftops, hey, this is my implicit bias, right? No one needs to be put on blast like that. But take the test so that you can become more aware of how that plays out in your own role as a marketer. So moving on to the next, which is those emotional underlying motivators. So the emotional landscape has grown drastically in recent years, right? So we used to think that there were only six basic emotional states: sadness, happiness, fear, anger, surprise, and disgust. But more studies have shown that there are actually hundreds of emotional motivators that drive consumer decisions, right? However, within all of those hundreds, and this is just a little, this slide also messed up, sorry about that. But what you also can see is this is just a snippet, right? So of that whole emotions map. But there are nine, what we call high impact buying motivators within those hundreds that are really, really driving consumer behavior. Man, what is happening? Okay, well, my PowerPoint hates life. Download it. You'll get all the pretty colored boxes and everything. So now that you can tell from the first one, I'll just read them off, but stand out from the crowd, right? So think fashion, for example, early tech adopters. People want to feel a sense of freedom, or they're buying something because it helps them be the person that they want to be. Maybe I want to learn Italian because I want to be a sophisticated jet setter. So I'm going to buy this course. Feel a sense of thrill. It helps me feel secure. It helps me enjoy a sense of well-being, right? So that weighted blanket that makes me calm and relaxed at the end of the day, or feel a sense of belonging. So insert, join a group here. or succeed in life. So perhaps you kind of already picked up on, even though you can't see it all, that all of these examples that I'm sharing with you, that I'm giving, they're interchangeable with a plethora of other options, right? So all of those options mean something different for our marketing, because we all have those core values that I mentioned that drive the underlying motivators. So if I were to draw, which I didn't for these slides, which is probably good, our values drive our emotions, which drive our decisions. So understanding these key values is going to be also key in differentiating which one of these 9 buying motivators our consumers are bringing into their decision-making process. So let's go with feel secure, right? What exactly do they want to feel secure about? So is it, I want financial security so that I can buy all the newest tech on the market? Or is it, I feel lost in this volatile world and I want job security so that I can put food on my table? Those two senses of security are the opposite ends of the emotional spectrum. So if you can't hone in on what security they're striving for, that's going to change your marketing very, very significantly, and your marketing messages very significantly, right? So using values to inform marketing it's harder, right, than using demographics or psychographics, because demographics and psychographics can be turned into data points. They can be turned into those little numbers and dots that we can say, hey, let's personalize it this way or personalize it that way. But with values, it's been much, much harder to do that up until now. So, you know, I did sign a speaker agreement, can't like promote services, be overly self-promotional, et cetera. But this isn't for me. So if you've never heard of David Allison with the Value Graphics Company, I highly recommend you add him to your research to-do list. He and his team have been at the forefront of researching and turning values into data points, right? So now how can we say, oh, I value security, I value something else, and we'll get to kind of get to the top 10. And how can I use that in my marketing, right? So we'll take a look here at the core human values. This is the top 10 plus the togetherness cluster. So the togetherness cluster are the 4: family, relationships, belonging, community. Now these 4 values show up across every single consumer profile that the Value Graphics team has done research on, every single one, from B2B to B2C to, you know, high retail, fashion, SaaS, et cetera. In some way, shape, or form, the togetherness cluster factors or values factor into everything. And they may not be at the top of the buying decisions, but they are absolutely present, which, as a side note, means that is why events in any industry are so important, right? So then the rest of the top 10, and you can see there are already 2 types of security on here that we talked about: financial security, employment security. And then in the full list of 56 core human values, there's another type of security, which is just security that's personal security, physical security, right? So there's a lot of securities. All right. Remember that earlier I mentioned, right, that now that we have this underlying emotional motivators and now we have our values, how does this play out in consumer groups? What does this mean for that? I'm going to take a study that was done between Patagonia and North Face. Show of hands, do you think the consumer groups between Patagonia and North Face are very different? If you think they're very different, raise your hands. Just a few people. Because they're in the same sector, right? They seem to be very big competitors going after the same people in the same space. So you would imagine there would be slight tiny differences between the two. But when we looked at the underlying values between both, there are some really big differences. Huge, actually. So with Patagonia, their consumers, they're all about personal responsibility, loyalty, security, experiences, and employment security. So two of those securities show up for Patagonia consumers, right? Whereas North Face, they're all about belonging, creativity, self-expression, financial security, possessions. So this means is, hey, this translates in Patagonia world, personal responsibility can be spelled environmentalism, right? That's also why they will publish books such as The Grassroots Activists. Whereas North Face is really, really good about pulling in community, pulling in belonging. They have their About the Explore Fund, right? Which is all about bringing together people and the outdoors. And I guarantee you, once you start looking at Patagonia and North Face marketing in the lens of these values, you'll start to see the differences. And you'll start to see that they're actually, even though they're in the same sector, they're going after very different people. All right. So we have this bigger picture. We have a sense of how this plays out. But how do we start building, right, our data set with the goal of emotions and value identification in mind? How do we start pairing that empathy with that data, right? And we have to switch the lens on our first party data, right? And I know that this is the cream of the crop, the tip of the top, right? To quote Mary Poppins, but all of us are data marketers. So we all know that for what first party data is, and that if we're gonna be data focused, we need to collect first party data because it is, right? It's direct from our consumers. It's more cost effective and reliable often than third party, but it's a pain in the butt to collect and scale, right? But this is definitely where we need to start. So rethink your entire data ecosystem. And before you come after me, I don't mean like go out and buy all these new tools and rethink how you're pulling in, how you're doing surveys or how you're sending emails or anything like that, right? I mean, start looking at the questions that you are asking your consumers. Are they product focused, these questions that you're asking? Are they brand focused? Are they only, hey, on a scale of 1 to 5, how did we help you today, right? That is so, I don't wanna say selfish, but it's selfish, right? It's your only care about the brand, not about really what your customers are thinking about. So chances are you already have a ton of avenues for pulling in data. You're asking quizzes, you're doing surveys, you're conducting market research, right? Customer interviews. It's perfectly acceptable to start asking questions like, hey, why do you go to work every day? Or, why would you give away half of your lottery winnings? Those are way out of center, left field. I'm also not a baseball person. Way out of the blue, right? No one expects a brand to ask those questions because it's not about the brand. But asking these direct questions is going to start to help you identify keywords that your consumers are saying, right? And with the goal of identifying these keywords, do you ever go to where your consumers are just to listen? Not to make conversation, not to, you know, pitch a service or a product, but just to listen. Listen to the conversations that they're having. Listen to what their top problems or concerns are in life, right? And then what are your customers saying in your forums, in your on your social media platforms? As a marketer, have you ever listened to a customer service call? They are a gold mine of information, right? So once you start picking out and identifying these keywords, these patterns start to emerge. And those patterns are your customers' values. Whatever methods you use, just make sure that you are taking your active listening one step further. You're not listening to understand. You're listening to understand the why behind what it is they are saying. So I love Alley-Oop as an example for this. They are a makeup brand, if no one is familiar with them. But they are a great example of a brand that is highly focused on understanding their consumers' emotions and values right from the start, right from the get-go. So in one of their first customer touch points, they have a makeup quiz, right? And this goes beyond just like, oh, what shade of makeup am I? Or what shade fits me? This is a beauty routine quiz. And they build their questions not just around the type of beauty products that you're using, right? Oh, I like mascara better, or I like eyeliner better, etc. The question in this quiz is, when it comes to beauty products, what would you benefit from the most? And the answer options that they give you are very much values-based. So it's quick and easy. It speeds up my routine. I want more bang for my buck. It's TSA travel friendly, right? So when you start all of that, when you start building it from the get-go, then you can really identify those consumer values. So what do we do with this data once we have it, and how do we fit it into our marketing journeys? So how do we design with empathy? Your customers will emotionally unsubscribe before they physically unsubscribe. So to increase conversion, we actually need to increase connection first, right? And this is looking at, we do this through the marketing system, marketing ecosystem, marketing messages that we write every single day, right? And this is where my team and I have created a systematic framework that comes into rating your marketing comms on a scale of 1 to 5 across various different elements for empathy, right? So the customer empathy scorecard, ta-da! Such a great name, very self-explanatory. But there are 4 elements here on this scorecard. Emotion, right? Does your messaging connect with your consumers' emotions or just rely on logic and rationality? Values, is your target persona clearly identified and are you speaking to their values? So this is kind of going back to the beauty example if we want to. Are you sending me an email about a 52 shade eyeshadow palette when I don't even use eyeshadow? And you would know that because I just took your beauty routine quiz. Story, whose story are you telling? Is your messaging focused on the customer or the brand? And then action, have you provided clear next steps for your customer to take, if there is any clear steps that they need to take, right? On social media posts, you may not need to have clear steps. Engagement may be your goal, but you have to look at those different goals. But this also might be like, hey, give me my free stuff. Don't make me wade through 2 pages of how to get it or hide the fact that I have to pay for shipping and handling, et cetera. So on each of these, you are going to rank your marketing messages on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being poor, 5 being great. And be honest with yourselves, right? All right, so what does this framework look like in action? So we worked with Patagonia, specifically their books division, to rework their program to include empathetic marketing and this framework. And one area of comms that we really worked in with was their social media. So as we know from our previous discussion about Patagonia consumers, right? One of their focus values is experiences. Now, we also pulled in other various data. We also pulled in other various data, right? We looked at, apart from that core value, what was their buying motivator through their various surveys, through their various data and years of information that they have on their consumers. And the one of the key buying motivators for the Patagonia consumer was a sense of thrill. So you'll see the social post on the left here is about an author and his signing, his book signing, his book event, right? And within social media, it's really hard to run an A/B test because there's so many different variables about social media, but we were able to cut it down pretty significantly, those variables. So we used the same picture, right? We made sure to post it during the same time we had the same amount of followers. It was posted on the same day or the same time of day, but spread out about a week or so. And we made sure that, we made sure that they didn't have any other big marketing messages going on that might have increased the numbers. So on the right, you'll see we changed that language and we pulled in things like, has experienced the pain of oxygen depletion? Or asking the question, is climbing worth dying for? So instead of just, oh, this author is coming and he's going to sign his memoir, come join us, we pulled in those experiences and sense of thrill into the copy. And what we found just on this post alone was a 4% increase in engagement, right? So these shifts towards empathy can be made across all of your marketing touch points, landing pages, drip campaigns, ad copy, and specifically with Patagonia's books division, a full program shift towards empathy led to a 59% increase in overall consumer engagement and 104% increase in clicks. That's pretty significant, right? So empathetic marketing is an ongoing process, right? And our consumer needs and values are changing constantly. So instead of using data to manipulate, we want to use it to understand our audience better and invest in meaningful conversations with our consumers from an empathetic standpoint and bring those two together to really focus on prioritizing building relationships. Wow. Okay, now you have to download my deck because there's just a lot of glitches here and I'm not sure what happened. However, wow, I don't think that QR code could be any larger. But if you scan it, we have a new empathetic marketing, a guide to connection and conversion, which better tells you also about what we talked here today and helps give you that framework as a download that you can take home. So are there any questions? I know I wanted to make sure we got out in time for lunch because I will not stand in the way of anybody's lunch or food. Okay. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the official DigiMarcon podcast. DigiMarcon is the largest digital marketing, media, and advertising conference and exhibition event series in the world, holding in-person and hybrid events in over 40 cities annually across 22 countries, as well as virtual events and an international cruise. Learn more about upcoming DigiMarcon events near you at digimarcon.com/events. Thanks again for listening to the official DigiMarcon podcast.